Pink Floyd from The Division Bell and Wearing the Inside Outs, which brings us on to our first monthly discussion, Wellbeing Window, with Gavin Sharp from Riviera Wellbeing. And the subject this morning is Silencing the Inner Critic. Hi, Gavin.
Good morning, Rob.
How would you say that song summed up things?
It was a bit depressing.
Yeah, well, but that's the kind of voices that are going on in some people's heads.
Absolutely. That relentless kind of negative talk that that is going on in our heads.
Mm. Well, we've got a lot of questions to get through, but I know you want to enlarge on the subject. So first of all, I mean, you know, with the current situation, and I have to say personally that I've been very lucky to be able to come to work during the pandemic. You know, I've got a garden that I can tend to the weekends, but it's starting to get me down, not being able to go out and see friends, and, you know, when you feel like it, and having to stay in, and just all the restrictions that are being imposed on us. So collectively, how would you summarise the state of our well-being given the current situation? I mean, are we all going mad?
Or have we gone mad? I think you touch upon something really pertinent, which is these last few weeks, these last couple of months, I've noticed a difference with my clients that this bit's much harder. And this sense of helplessness, this sense of being out of control, it's overwhelming. And I mean, the research is very mixed because there's some research where now we have a new phrase, which is called post-traumatic growth. And apparently some of us have had spiritual enlightenment and we've managed to take a lot from the lockdown. I would say in my experience, that's not the case for most people. And I think, again, if you look at the research, something came out recently, quite a substantial piece of research that said about 70% of 18 to 25-year-olds, you know, just as they're graduates, they're going into the world, they want to discover themselves and their identities. And these guys are having severe anxiety and depression. So I think you've summed it up. I think it's really tough.
It's particularly hard for younger people, obviously, because, as you say, this is the time they want to be out and enjoying themselves and, you know, discovering life. But and also you have to think that, you know, for those people who have actually lost somebody close to them through the coronavirus or have been very ill themselves, and people with long COVID, for example, again, you have to think, well, I'm really lucky because that just hasn't affected me yet.
Absolutely. I think it's really easy to say, well, maybe I'm not in that category, so what's the problem? But you're right. If I'm in that, whether it's a minority of people who are suffering, who have lost relatives, I'm not sure it's of much comfort that my relative was 83. But if I lost them due to COVID, then I'm going to be grieving. So yes, we mustn't forget that those people exist. And we're so wanting to, and understandably, just be positive and look to the future. But it is real and it has happened.
Okay, well, we all, or most of us, I mean, some people say they don't, but most of us have that little voice inside our head saying, oh, I can't do this, I'm no good at this, I won't even try doing it because I'm no good. So what exactly is the inner critic? Is it just a version of the old mother-in-law inside your head?
Well, I can't speak for your mother-in-law, but I think you've nailed it. It's that running commentary, it's that negative self-talk, and it's usually saying something like, I'm not good enough. I'm stupid, or I'm incompetent, or I'm not man enough, I'm a failure. So there is this voice that we're not even aware of. I mean, I think that's part of the problem. You know, if I break my leg and I go out into the streets, I know I can't run, I know I have a broken leg, and everybody around me, they know I have a broken leg. But if I'm walking through the street and in my relationships, I've got this belief that I'm not good enough, that I don't deserve to be happy. And inner critic has always got words like always and should and never. You know, it becomes a really limiting, almost self-fulfilling prophecy, because it's limiting my worldview. It's the lens through which I'm experiencing life.
My mother-in-law is perfectly capable of speaking for herself, thank you very much.
Well, she just emailed me, but we'll leave that one out. We'll leave that one out, Rob.
Okay, we've got a first question from Janet, and of course, lots of people have either been furloughed or they've lost their jobs completely during this pandemic. And Janet says, in the last 12 months, I was made redundant and have struggled to find work in the hospitality sector. It's hard not to feel a failure. Any thoughts welcome?
Well, I feel for her, as you say, for the people who are in a situation like that. And I think she's right. It's hard not to feel like a failure. And I think that's one of the ways. Now we're talking about, what do I do with this inner voice? And I think one of the things that we need to try and do is firstly have some self-compassion and say, okay, this is difficult. I've lost my job. And I'm going to allow myself to be disappointed, to be angry. And then I would say to the person who's written in to look for evidence that might contradict, because it's a very global statement, I am a failure. And, you know, I had a client once and she was absolutely convinced that she was a failure. And there's nothing I could say because she was not going to let me penetrate that wall. And I remember when I said to her, so where did you park your car when you came in this morning? And she's, what do you mean? I said, just curious where you parked. And so I did the Novotel car park. And I said, okay, so how did you drive your car? And she said, I don't understand the question. How did you drive? Why were you able to drive? Which she said, I passed my test. So then she knew I was teasing her. I said, well, then you're not a complete failure because at some point you passed your driving test. So I know it's a silly example, but we just get into this habit of global thinking that we're not good enough. And there's very often evidence that contradicts that global belief.
Yeah, I think that in case of people losing their jobs, I mean, so many people have lost their jobs over the past 12 months that you can just say that, you know, this isn't down to me. This is just because of the pandemic and because my business can't afford to pay me anymore. And that's it, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. The problem is, if I already am walking around with this belief, then I'm going to attract all the evidence that confirms it. And I'll come in and say, see, I told you, Rob. Told you I'd lose my job. That's what happens to me. I'm one of those people where this happens. And I've already discounted the fact that lots of people have lost their jobs due to COVID.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that because I've got your P45 waiting for you. So.
You got me back for the mother-in-law joke.
Yeah. Do we all have an inner critic? I mean, do therapists have an inner critic? Do you have an inner critic, Gavin? I mean, what's your inner critic saying?
My inner critic. Why did I come on the radio? My inner critic saying. Yeah, I think probably we all have a version of it. So I'll give you a personal example of before this ridiculous pandemic world set in, I used to do a lot of presentations. So I would go and do talks. And then at the end of the evening, sometimes people would come up and say, if I'm lucky enough, I enjoyed your presentation or I thought it was useful. And I would say, I left out slide 32 and I forgot to say this. And it took me a while to realize, and by the way, the person's looking at me like, are you crazy? Like, I just came to say thank you. And all you're telling me was you forgot one of your slides. And I realized, let it go, Gavin. It's, you know, you were good enough. Why is that voice not able to receive the compliment? Why are you undermining yourself? So yeah, absolutely, I have it.
Well, mine is just not attempting things, saying there's no point in me even trying to do that because I know I can't do it.
Yeah.
And I've had so many DIY jobs sort of around the house, and I just let things go, basically, and I thought, I'll do that one day. I can't do it at the moment because I'm not very good at it. And then I had to take 2 weeks off during the first lockdown for a holiday because we had to use the holiday out before the end of the year. And I thought, right, I'm actually going to try and do this. So I looked up a lot of YouTube videos and did the whole lot and was surprised that it was actually fairly competent. So, you know, when you tell yourself you can't do things, it just does become a habit, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I said it becomes just a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well-being window every first Wednesday of the month on Riviera Radio. Let's move on to another question. By the way, you don't have to use your real name. I mean, if you don't want to be, you know, you're scared that somebody might recognise you, then just make up a name. And of course, we wouldn't pass your details on to anybody else. This comes from Irina. I'm a mother of three. I gave up my job to raise the children. My husband wants to divorce. I think he's seeing somebody else. Now I have no career. I'm financially unstable and I'm not young anymore. I can't help not feeling a failure. Any suggestions?
Yeah, I feel for Irina. I think that, again, it's we're in that territory where we're saying to ourselves, I feel like a failure. And what I have to do is sometimes I have to separate the event from the emotion. So in her case, I think you said that her marriage had failed. So the fact is that my marriage has failed, but it doesn't mean that I am a failure. And so it's almost like the the example before of the person who's parking the car, and I would say to her, how does she feel about herself as a mother? How would her kids describe her? So again, I suspect there would be some evidence to the contrary that she's not a failure, but I also wouldn't want to take away her grief, because she's saying that this is a difficult time, and I think you said her husband is seeing another woman. So the self-compassion part is, I also have to accept the suffering, and I have to allow myself permission to say, this is really tough, and yeah. I'm angry and sad and hurt.
She did say she thinks he right. might be seeing somebody else, right. but hasn't had it actually confirmed.
Right, yeah.
Are we born with an inner critic, Gavin, or is it something we develop?
It's a great question, and I don't know that any of us, myself included, know the answer for sure. I think we're born with this inner alarm system. So our primitive brain has set us up so that we can be aware of danger. That's why fear and anxiety can be healthy. So that when we were hunting in packs, and we were in the cave, we needed to have this inner alarm system that said, look over there, because, you know, there's a lion that's going to eat me.
I can't possibly kill that.
It's kill or be killed. So I think we have something that is innate that prepares us for danger. But then I think as we get older, we internalize our life experiences. And then we can start to look at things like, for example, people who have a really harsh inner critic will sometimes say, actually, I didn't get much praise growing up. Or, yeah, I got 3 A's at A level, but my father was disappointed because I didn't get a star. And I think as kids, you know, I sometimes talk about attachment wounds, which is that sometimes things happen growing up, could be a loss, could be a rejection, could be neglect, could be abuse. But things happen that from those events, they really shape the way we see the world. That's my world template. And if I develop these core beliefs, and I just take a step back, as kids, we're egocentric. So when something goes wrong, we don't assume that, well, mum and dad are having an argument, it's because dad's working hard at the moment and money's tough. Kids assume there's something wrong with me. And from that, we develop these negative core beliefs. I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. And then they're kind of set in stone.
Of course, family tensions have been rising over the last 12 months because we're all on top of each other and a lot of people are working from home. I was listening to a programme on another station yesterday and the chap was saying, you know, I'm a home dad and my wife is the breadwinner. She's got a high-powered job and, you know, she earns lots of money and I agreed to stay home and look after the kids. And all of a sudden, she had to start working from home. She turned our bedroom into an office and she's in corporate world somewhere. And he said, I started seeing a side of her I really didn't like her work sort of personality. And he said, I really don't like it and I feel I'm being shoved out. So, you know, people are really, you know, that's adding to the tensions, isn't it?
Absolutely. I don't think, you know, we weren't built to spend 24 hours a day with our spouses. And it's not healthy because in order for there to be a spark, in order for there to be romance, we actually need to have a balance between our own independence and our emotional dependence with our spouse. And so when our routines are disrupted in that way and we're living in each other's pockets in that way and the dining room table is now the office, as you just said, etc., absolutely tensions are flaring up.
Okay, one more question before the news from JJ. My partner says, I push my children to be the best at everything. Will they grow up believing they're a failure?
That's interesting because I would ask, what does to be the best at everything mean? And are these your dreams or are they the dreams of your kids? So I think, and again, it always amazes me, my friends with kids, and I say, oh no, what's little Johnny doing this week? And little Johnny's got tennis lessons, then he goes to soccer, then he goes to dance class, then he has extra math tuition. And I just think, actually, there's a difference between I want my child to fulfill their potential. I want my child to be the best version of themselves, or I want my child to make up for what I didn't have. So I would say just, you know, for me, it's about letting the kids achieve the best version of themselves rather than that, be the best at everything, because that's going to be tough to achieve.
Let's go straight back to Gavin Sharp from Riviera Wellbeing with our Wellbeing Window. Lots of questions to get through, actually, Gavin, so I think we'll plough straight on with those. Talking about silencing the inner critic, Mike says, is it hard not to have an inner critic? Or it is hard not to have an inner critic when your mother tells you what a disappointment you are constantly and criticises you. I guess this might be from one of our younger listeners. What do you think?
I think it's a really good example of how the inner critic sometimes gets set up. And I think sometimes in parental relationships, again, I don't know how old the person who's written in is, Mike, but sometimes we also have to have healthy boundaries. And sometimes we need to be able to say to the person who's criticizing us, you know, it's not okay for me when you do this. When you criticize me, I feel neglected, or I feel not seen, or I feel angry. But boundaries and having a personal boundary is really important. I do a workshop just on this. I do a morning of just how can we have healthier physical boundaries, emotional boundaries, sexual boundaries. So it's not okay. You may be my mother, but it's not okay for you to speak to me that way.
Quite often when somebody else criticizes you, doesn't it say more about them than it does about yourself?
Absolutely. It's very often a sign of repressed anger that I will project onto you, Rob, what I can't hold myself. So I blame you for, as I did in the break, for the bad coffee. But actually, what's really going on with you, Gavin? Why are you having a go at Rob because the coffee's bad? Something is wrong with you, Gavin. You got out of the wrong side of the bed this morning. You can't be angry or disappointed, so you make it about somebody else.
Well, you did insist on making it yourself. I mean, you know, you did. Allowed me to make it. I know how it works, you see.
You did the dinosaur coffee machine, and you knew better than I did.
Next time. Yeah. Melania, not that Melania, I don't think.
Well, she's not tweeting, I assume.
No, this is an email. I see a personal trainer almost every day. I watch my diet. I don't drink. I don't like my body. My friends say I'm too critical about myself.
That makes me sad. Assuming that, you know, Melania is not, let's say she's not clinically obese and overweight, in which case there's a medical issue, then that's an example of the inner critic. And at one end of the spectrum, there's such a thing as body dysmorphia, which is I'm preoccupied with my body appearance. I spend a disproportionate amount of time looking in the mirror, worrying about it, fretting over it, rather than actually just saying, do you know what? I'm good enough. I am good enough just like this.
Well, it's amazing because this is a problem that's really affecting young people, isn't it? So especially with the social media that everyone's using these days. And you see people, you know, who look absolutely fantastic, you know, very, very good looking, nice bodies, and then they say they don't like their body or they're not happy with the way they look.
And again, it's that wall that goes up. I'm holding a core belief. My inner critic has told me something, and I can't receive evidence to the contrary. So I'll give you an example. I had a client, and growing up, she was told that you're the clever one, and your sister's the pretty one. So what would happen is that my client would go out on dates, and men would say to her, I think you're really attractive. And she'd say, oh, that's nothing. You should see my sister. And there would be, sorry? No, I'm clever. But and she'd get her phone out and she would say, but look at my sister. So, but I'm on a date with you. But her core belief about herself and that inner critic was saying, I can't receive the compliment because you're not pretty enough.
Yeah. I've learned to not look in mirrors very often these days.
See, unlike, I've got mirrors everywhere in my home.
Have you?
No, I'm just kidding.
Narcissist.
That's a topic for another Wellbeing Window.
Talking of which, Donald Trump. Presumably, he's got an inner critic, but it didn't seem to stop him, did it?
Well, actually, I would say that, yeah, I think he probably has a very strong inner critic. And here's an example of someone who has to act in such a way that he can't experience his inner critic. So I would bet we could spend a whole week talking about Donald Trump. I would bet that he has a belief that he's not good enough and he's a failure. And the flip side to narcissism is, I believe I'm not worthy. So what I do is I puff up my chest and I will project this false self to the world, because I cannot face the fact that I might have lost an election. I can't. So I will just, because if I really accept that inner critic, I will really be depressed and anxious.
Gosh, it would have been interesting seeing having a full-on meltdown as a White House press conference, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
All right, Bob would... this is a funny one. I hope it's okay to say, but how can you feel good about yourself in Monaco when everyone is richer and more successful than you? A man working in Monaco and driving a small car. Oh, dear.
I mean, I don't know why I'm chuckling, because there are so many of us who are walking around with this sense of inadequacy. And I think what I took from that was comparison and how comparisons are so unhealthy. And there's a difference between saying, you know, my mentor, the person I look up to is Rob Harrison, because I think this guy is really inspirational.
Well, thank you very much.
However, it was just an example. However, when I start to say that I'm a failure because I'm not Bill Gates, then I'm starting to play into that, yeah, Gavin, you're not, you know, you really are inadequate. And I think Monaco is a place where you really have to understand your relationship with money. You really need to feel comfortable. And I think it was Theodore Roosevelt who said that comparison is the thief of joy. And it's so hard. We were talking about young people and social media. And we know that the impact on self-esteem it has when these kids are spending ages looking at the perfect person on social media, because I can't benchmark myself against that.
So envy and jealousy will actually eat you up in the end.
Yes, and I think it's okay to recognize that I want to improve. That's okay. I'm aspirational. I want to be more like Rob Harrison, but I have to accept it's a journey, and I'm also okay with where I am on the journey.
Do you think that having an inner critic is always a bad thing? I mean, what if my inner critic tells me not to ride my bike fast, for example, because I fell off one once?
I think it can be helpful. I think there's a voice that says, Gavin, don't get carried away. Don't be a narcissist, or don't ride your bike because you might hurt yourself if you ride too fast.
It's the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other, isn't it?
That's a great way to put it. Absolutely. So I have to acknowledge that there's a part of me that needs to be realistic and say that if I ride my bike too fast, I might fall off. That's okay. But if I feel like a failure because I'm not on this month's cover of Vogue, well, that's different. That's that I'm setting myself up for. I mean, unless Vogue contacts us after the show, I'm setting myself up for failure.
Hmm. Gosh, I've still got questions coming in. I hope we managed to get them all in. Michelle says, I don't think I'm good enough because my wife, that must be McKaylee then if it's a man. I don't feel I'm good enough because my wife keeps telling me that we don't have enough money. I need to earn more. She doesn't like my middle-aged belly either. I feel like I'm failing her.
So I would also look at the concept of what's enough money? And have you as a couple, and I do this with my couples intensives, and I will sit down with couples and what do you, as I think I may have said this on this show before, in any relationship, one of us tends to be more of a spender and one of us tends to be more of a saver. So what's the middle ground here? So for me, there was a sense of what role does money play in that relationship? Who gets to decide what is enough money? And again, if your, I can't remember if it was the wife or the husband, but if your partner is constantly telling you about your belly, because there's a difference when you say it kind of lovingly, like little my love handles or something. But if actually it's making you feel uncomfortable, then that's a boundary issue. And you need to be able to tell your spouse when you say that, I feel whatever the feeling is.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's where the inner critic can come in useful, because I mean, we all know that we should be taking better care of ourselves than a lot of us do. And, you know, we shouldn't smoke and we shouldn't drink. But, you know, that's where the inner critic comes and say, you shouldn't be smoking. You really shouldn't be. But then the other side's saying, go on, have one.
Yeah. And, you know, I often say to my clients, sometimes that we have to say to ourselves, do you know what? I'm doing the best I can with what I have. So I would like to drink less, I would like to smoke less, and I'm working on it, but I'm not going to destroy my self-esteem because of it.
Andrew says, what coping skills can I use to stop paranoia? It drives me mad and takes over my life. When I'm in the zone, when I'm out of the zone, I'm in a happy place. And that's almost like the inner critic becoming incessant, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think you, if someone is experiencing those kind of that kind of experience of paranoia, I would invite the person to build a relationship with your inner critic. What is the, well, two things actually. We need to have a relationship with our inner critic, and we need to be alive to what is it actually saying to us, so that we can do the second thing, which is, what's really going on here? And I'm paranoid. What is the emotion underneath it? I'm feeling insecure. I'm feeling anxious. And so we've got to be able to tune into our inner world, because that's the part that's going to impact our outer world.
I mean, paranoia can actually be pretty destructive if it gets very bad. And, you know, it's not surprising that a lot of people are feeling paranoid in the current world we're living in. So, I mean, really, if it does get very bad, you should speak to somebody, shouldn't you?
Absolutely. If it's to the point where it's starting to have a negative impact on your life, then it's time to, absolutely, it's time to talk to someone. And I think that some of the mental health issues that we're seeing now are people who had a propensity to mental health issues to begin with. So I might have been slightly anxious, or maybe I had a bout of depression when I was in my 20s. But for sure, if there was something that was underlying, the pandemic's brought it out.
Yeah, okay, Andrew, I hope that helps. David is another one, said, I've never been very good at holding down a job. I've had a succession of jobs, most of them only lasting 1 or 2 years, although I am highly qualified and never seem to get it right. So, you know, he can't help, he says he can't help feeling a failure because he can't hold a job down for any length of time.
So there may be some issues that are worth looking at in terms of what's happened in the workplace. What is that? What's that about? And what could you do differently? But also there was something, again, there was something very global in that question. There was a never, I think. Did you not say there was a never? I never.
Yeah, you said I never seemed to be able to manage to hold a job down for more than a year or two.
Yeah. So I would also want to look at some of the underlying core beliefs. So therefore, what do you believe about yourself, David? And I bet you if we sat down and spent some time together, well, I believe I'm not good enough. I believe I'm a failure. And then, okay, so where does that come from? Where did you learn that from? So it's breaking it down into bite-sized chunks so that we can understand where the global thinking comes from.
Right, we've got one more question before you sort of wrap up the subjects and you give us your conclusions. SB says, my friends look happier, prettier and richer than me. I honestly believe they are, but it can't be true all the time. Why do I think these things?
To me, that's another case of the comparison. And it might be true that some of your friends are happier and some of your friends are richer, and some people will find some of your friends more attractive than you. But that doesn't mean that I am unattractive or I'm unhappy. So for me, where does that stem from? That you hold this belief that other people are having a better time than you?
And one more's just come in, actually. Felicity, I'm listening to Rob and Gavin from my refuge from the UK in Portugal. So much fascinating and insightful information, entertainingly presented. Thank you, Felicity. Be the best you can be. If you don't quite make it, don't punish yourself, is something I often tell people. A positive message in these negative times.
I love that. I love that. Be the best that you can be. And just know that today, where I am and who I am, it's good enough. It doesn't mean I don't have the aspirations, but I can, and I know it's so cliched, but I can love myself enough. I am enough.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of truth in the sort of saying that every day is a new day, because I mean, if you get up and something starts going wrong, it can quite often ruin your entire day if you don't correct it. For example, you know, if I drive to work and I have a puncture, and oh, that's put me in a really bad mood. Today's going to be awful because of that. But then if you say, well, hang on, that's only one part of the day, the rest of it could be wonderful.
Absolutely. But I also need to allow myself, in the moment I have the puncture, I'm going to allow myself to say, I'm angry, I'm disappointed, and this is not how I wanted my day to start. Because when I don't allow myself the emotion, there's going to be an outburst probably later in the day because I didn't experience the emotion the first time round.
A couple of more points you wanted to clear up. Is the inner critic the same as perfectionism?
Many inner critics are perfectionists, and I would say that perfectionism is a wall that shame hides behind. So most perfectionists who, sometimes I have clients who say they procrastinate a lot, that I'm writing a proposal for work, but I never give it in, because if I put my head above the parapet and I give it in, someone can criticize me or judge me or shame me. So perfectionism for me is about hiding the shame, because underneath it, there's a core belief that I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough.
Yeah, well, nobody can ever be perfect. And of course, there is that feeling of failure. If you think you're not going to get something right, you just hold off doing it.
Yeah.
And to conclude, how do I manage my inner critic?
Well, I think the first thing is to recognize it's there. So I find it really helpful to sometimes give it a name. So when I hear little Gavin, and little Gavin is saying, you're not doing so good on the radio, I just need to accept that, okay, little Gavin, I hear you. Maybe you weren't as good today as you wanted to be, but go away. So I have to accept it, and I do, and I do tell it to go away. And then I think also it's about thinking about what would a friend say? So let's assume that I leave the show today and I'm really upset because I didn't perform the way I wanted to perform. And a friend would probably say, well, Gavin, you did okay. It was good enough. Yes, your last show was better. But a friend probably wouldn't trash me and say you were awful. So, and then I'll look for the evidence and I'll think, okay, well, what's that about? Who's told you that you weren't good on air? Why are you saying that to yourself? So for me, it's the naming it. What would a friend say? And where's the evidence?
Well, judging by the response to this morning's program, you've done very, very well.
But it won't stop me, because there will be a small part of me, and I will recognize it, I will allow it, and then hopefully it will go away, that will think, how did this morning go?
Well, somebody won't like it, but there's always somebody, yeah. Isn't
there? Well, it might be your mother-in-law.
Right, OK, well, that's the first extremely interesting subject, silencing the inner critic. Can you give us a preview of what we can expect in the coming months?
Well, I think, firstly, to Riviera Radio and to the team here, thank you for embracing mental health and wanting to do this and talk about well-being, because it is so important. And I would love people to write in, and what would you find it useful? I mean, we can talk about relationships. We can talk about, can we say sex?
You just did.
I just did.
Too sex!
there's a number of things. I'd love to know what would resonate with your listeners, and let's talk about it. And because to me, the only way that we can reduce the stigma around mental health is doing this.
Reminds me of a former landlord I once had who said, I don't care about the sex, but if you don't pay your rent, you're out.
Well, that could be our philosophy going forward. But thank you. I really do appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we appreciate you coming in. It's really, really useful, especially in these difficult times. So that's Wellbeing Window. The next one will be on the first Wednesday of March. Thank you, Gavin.
Thank you very much. And April.
April, sorry. Yeah, that's my inner critic getting the month wrong. Now go away, little Gavin.
Thank you, little Rob and Big Rob. Best